Good to be here, Tom.
David Yepsen, director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, News Radio WJPF. You've done a series of polls, David, and released them in incremental. If you have a takeaway from the polls that you did, your last that you'll be overseeing at the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, what did you learn about those polls in relationship to this coming election, and what are Southern Illinois thinking and feeling?
Well, the large number of people who are thinking about leaving, who would like to leave or who are thinking about it.
47%.
Yeah, that's bad. People in Illinois especially are in a deep funk about our future. And they're looking for some solutions. And one of the problems with this campaign is I don't think they're hearing it. We're calling this all this name-calling and all these ads and efforts by candidates to talk about specifics about what they do about different things really get drowned out in all this clutter. So that's my takeaway. A lot of people want to leave, particularly younger people. I mean, that's your seed corn.
Does somebody who wants to leave go vote?
Some do. I think so.
Well, I've always been interested in your stance that when people become disenfranchised and the system makes them take away, they rather than get involved, they just kind of wash their hands and say, I don't want to touch it. It's dirty.
Yeah, and you do have some people like that. But one of the indicators that tells me people are so angry they're going to come roaring into the electorate is voter registrations are up.
7.9 million.
Yeah, we're going to hit 8 million before this registrations are over with. So that's an indicator that a lot of people are going to vote. It's presidential year. They get it. It's time to make some decisions.
A Donald Trump supporter would say right now, I can already hear her email. She would say, of course, they're signing up. They're Donald Trump supporters. Look at the nationwide turnout the Republican Party has received in sheer voter turnout for the Republicans. And that's going to be something we're going to hear more about. It's the numbers, who's registered, and the turnout itself. Hillary Clinton is already saying, hey, you can vote across the street. They're putting their campaign stump speeches across from voter locations. You can go vote right over there. Go now.
The Trump people believe that there is something of a closet Trump vote out there, that when pollsters call up people and ask them how they're going to vote, it's not cool to be for Donald Trump. And so they don't want to talk, or they say they're undecided. And in fact, a lot of people are for him but aren't saying so. I'm not sure if that's holding up. There are all these polls, tons of polls. We're awash in them. And given the numbers that show her ahead 5 to 6 points pretty consistently, I think if there were that secret Trump vote out there, we would have seen it more. But we've got a couple weeks to go, and every time you turn around, something new comes out. The front page story of the New York Times yesterday was about the revelations of more Clinton emails.
Oh, Bill Clinton Inc.
Yeah. And at one level, it's news. It ought to rock a campaign. But another view is the negative attitudes toward Hillary Clinton are sort of baked into the cake now. And one more story about Bill Clinton out raising money and cashing in, allegations of cashing in, probably isn't going to make that much difference.
Just a few short years ago, this information from WikiLeaks would have been the death knell for any campaign in this country.
Well,
but now the mudslide, because I enjoyed the baked in the cake, I get that. This mudslide, you can't tell which piece of mud's going to kill you. I mean, it's all coming, and I think people can't discern one piece from another. It's just an onslaught.
Well, that and that's been true for both Clinton and for Trump. And things that would ordinarily have knocked a candidate clear out of the race just haven't affected him. So, interesting. We're going to elect the most unpopular president we've ever elected in modern times, certainly since public opinion polling has been done.
Well, people, I mean, literally in the situation, David, where after the depictions, the messaging, the social media, the piling on, the memes in social media, that we're almost categorized as we have a choice between two Batman supervillains that we have to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And that bothers me, really bothers me a lot.
Well, and I think that's why after the election, we're going to all wake up with a big headache. Look, we're going to have a new president who's unpopular, and all the problems that are upsetting people haven't gone away. The problems that people have with not getting good jobs, trying to keep jobs, that a lot of young people, millennials, have, and getting on that first rung of the ladder, those problems are still there. And a lot of the things that drive the Donald Trump vote, which are older men who
are angry.
Yeah. They cannot get a job. They have fallen out of the economy. Those problems are still going to be there. I'll give you an example, Tom. We're talking about driverless cars and trucks. It's a coming thing. Sounds strange, but it's coming. Well, what are we going to do with all the people who drive trucks when they don't have jobs? What are we going to do with people who drive cabs when they don't have jobs? With America's problems, we're going to get a new president, so thank God the election's over, but the problems aren't going away, and whoever gets elected has got some real challenges to face.
And you know what's interesting is the voters know that and don't have a way to verbalize it. The voters know that, you know, it's great. That's really good. But my insurance just went from $700 to $1,800. That's all great that you've got a new job, and we're going to fix it. But does that mean I don't have to make this payment because I can't afford it?
Well, I think on health care, I think we're headed to a day when it's Medicare for all. You know, government-controlled health care. It seems to be moving in that direction.
And no stopping it.
And there's really no stopping it. And it may happen simply because business can't afford all these costs. Taxpayers can't afford these costs, so we just go to one system. I don't know how it all shakes out. They're not easy solutions.
I think we'll slowly disassemble the best medical system in the world.
Well, and you know, one other thing that's going to happen after the election is there's a lot of anger in both political parties. How did we have a process that produced these two candidates? And you're going to see both parties take a look at themselves and how they go about nominating candidates. This business of having a poll that picks where people stand in a debate, letting small states like Iowa, where I come from, but New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada have such an outsized influence on the thing, which enabled Trump to win a series of plurality victories. Democrats, the Bernie Sanders people, upset about all the superdelegates. I mean, Democrats probably have a problem with too many superdelegates, and Republicans could probably use a few more. And so both parties are going to be going through a period of what do we stand for? Who are we? You could see the factions of the Republican Party starting to break up. The conservative media is split over this election. It's going to be an interesting time to be a political watcher, but the country's got a lot of introspection to do.
What happens when a critical mass of people in this country realize they don't vote, they don't elect a president?
Well, they're talking about the Electoral College, and that's been a frustration for many people for years, but it's not going to change. I think the best you could hope for is to do what Maine and Nebraska do, which is to award their electoral votes on a congressional district by congressional district basis. Right now, it's winner take all in most states. But in those two states, if you get a win in a congressional district, you get that one electoral vote. That's why Trump and Clinton are in places like North Omaha or in the state of Maine. And wouldn't that be interesting in a place like Illinois, which is considered to be a safe Democratic state? But if you look at, you break down the state a little bit, there are some battleground districts. And if you awarded the districts on the electoral votes in a district on the basis of how that district voted, you'd have more competition. You'd have, down here in southern Illinois, you know, you'd have a Republican who'd be able to pick up at least two or three votes here. That may be the best hope, but even there, I doubt that we'll ever get to that.
It's interesting when you say the word, we'll have more competition like that. What I hear in my mind is we'll have more opportunity to hear our voices heard in the process as opposed to just writing us off because you're going to vote for Hillary. Hillary's going to have that state, and we don't have anything to say, and you don't have a voice with us.
Right.
That competition allows us to express ourselves and be heard instead of being written off.
That's right.
And that to me is very attractive as a lifelong resident.
But, you know, The Electoral College is a product of a great compromise that was put together when this country was founded, and that was the big states aren't going to be allowed to overwhelm the small states.
Yeah.
And so that's why we have every state gets two U.S. senators, but the House of Representatives is based on population.
Yeah.
So I don't think the Electoral College will change.
Yeah, and tinkering with the system right now, boy, probably not a good idea.
Well, and be careful of unintended consequences.
Because that's something that the government is exceedingly good at. Unforeseen consequences from the Primary Act, second, third order of effects of the Affordable Care Act. I mean, you could go on, the list goes. The state of Illinois voters get a double whammy. We see and soak up the negative aspects of the presidential and nationwide context, while at the same time realizing we live in a state that has record high taxes, we have low services, we pay our legislators more than most states in the union, we have a pension problem, we don't have a budget, we have a corrupt system by many people's definitions. And then we have such a contentious nature in these local races where outside money, PACs, put these commercials on that are not issue driven by any stretch of the imagination. I'm trying to think of one that I saw that was an issue driven commercial right now, and I guess coal would be the issue.
Well, the thing that troubles me is that after the election, local officials particularly, they're going to have to start working together. And what's happened in these local legislative races with all this outside money, this savaging people personally and the grainy photographs and that, gosh, it's going to be awfully hard for local officials to set that all aside and sing kumbaya and work together. I think it's going to be a while for some sore feelings to heal.
David, you're out as the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. Your last day of service is?
Today.
Wow, I knew it was close. Yeah. I didn't realize it was today. I can't tell you much. As a lifelong resident, I very often see when I see a position open and in one of the, I want to see an Illinoisan hired. I want to see somebody from the state. So when I hear you're hired for the position, I start doing a little research on you. And I realized that, the incredibly good choice you were for the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, that this person from Iowa, who was literally this iconic presidential election figure. When people came to town and they wanted to know, they came to you. And I realized that you were nationally known among your peers as having knowing what's going on here when it comes to the relationship with the president. You've been a newspaper guy, right, your entire life?
Right.
And I really like newspaper people. And it's been a real privilege to have because you have really spurred my thinking.
Well, thank you, Tom. That's great. Yeah, this will be. I've worked every election night for 42 years, and so this coming one will be the first night I'll be able to sit home with a clicker and a can of beer and watching TV just like everybody else. Thanks, Tom. This has been a great experience for me to come here. I'm from small town Iowa, so I've always felt right at home here. I must say it's fun to come out here and talk to you because there aren't a lot of people in local radio who do what you do for this region. I mean, one of the first experiences I had when I got here was listening to you go around the clock in that derecho storm in May, and that was that's public broadcasting at its finest. So yeah, it's been fun to work with you, Tom.
Been a real privilege. And I like the fact that you provoke my thought. And I don't mean that in a confrontational way, because I was talking with my good friend Tom McNamara on the phone from the Southern Illinois Enforcement Group last night. And I said, the worst thing in the world is somebody who thinks they knows everything. They think they already know. And they're unwilling to learn. They're unwilling. And I was saying, the old Confucius proverb, the ocean refuses no river. That sometimes things come to you which make you a little uncomfortable. And that uncomfortable nature usually is a precursor for you accepting a new truth.
Yep.
And I've always found that, especially your thoughts, I've even got a couple of things I've named after you, the Yeltsin dilemma, which is the point in which your opponent co-opts your position because you're winning and he wants to steal that from you.
Right.
and the fact that you very often talk about disenfranchised voters and their lack of willingness to go to the polls because we see it and it's real and it undermines the system. But then on the other hand, you see some people who think that maybe voting may not be their intellectual cup of tea because they're just indifferent. I mean, I've seen them just vote for names, right? I mean, this is a weird, weird game that impacts everybody's life. And a trained observer, I think, like yourself, after 42 years, have seen that we maybe have not gone in the direction we'd like, David.
Well, look, we don't have any other system. There's a lot of flaws in it. It's still a democratic system. I still get a little chill when I walk into the voting booth and realize how few people in the world have this opportunity, that a lot of people have died to protect this right that we have. So I take it personally pretty seriously. And I think the challenge is to make people understand that, for all the frustrations we have, it's pretty important to vote. But I agree, there are a lot of people who are turned off. I remember seeing a T-shirt one time that if God had wanted us to vote, he'd have given us candidates. You know, that's how cynical a lot of people get.
Yeah. But the fact, there's another fact that you and I both know. You've done 42. I've done 40 as of last Wednesday, something like that. People are smarter than they've ever been, maybe more jaded and cynical than ever, especially when it comes to hope in America and seeing a future with a city on the hill and the lights and all this, right? That we're smarter, but the effect has been we've become more jaded.
Oh, no question about it. And that social media is a big part of that. It just constant negativity and savagery that goes on there. I mean, we've always had spirited political campaigns, but this is a degree now that's unprecedented. And on money, that you, just the money you see on television, but also the really angry, ugly stuff that's out there on social media. And part of the one of the effects of that is that a lot of good people who might want to run for office, who'd make great candidates, don't do it. I mean, who wants to stand up and take that?
And who wants to, you know, have your name? I mean, I saw this one that the guy went after the entire family and mocked his entire family, and I'm thinking, I'll see you in the parking lot when we're done. See, but that mentality is that street fight, I'm going to cut you, man, has really invaded the political arena.
That's right. But I still
been counterproductive as hell.
It has been, and I still don't think that you solve this problem that our country and this state and region have by walking away from it. I think the only solution is you roll up your sleeves, you get involved in the campaign, you run for office yourself, and you try to make a difference.
And you be the voice of reason in the process.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David, it's been a real privilege. I hope to bother you in Iowa on more than one occasion.
Well, you got my phone number, Tom.
I do.
Anytime.
And I probably will abuse it.
Anytime.
But thank you.
Good
David
luck
Gebson,
to you.
The director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. How long were you there?
Seven and a half years.
So,
been a great time.
Did
thank
you like
you.
Southern Illinois?
Do I like something?
Yeah, I mean, Iowa. I mean, I see you the two favorite places, my place where I buy my best cup of coffee and where I get the best books.
Now, I tell you, Tom, the winters are too mild down here. I got to go back to Iowa and have a good blizzard.
It's man, just, why don't we just
you get
cut
an
out
inch
the middle,
of snow
man.
Here and you call it a snowstorm.
When December comes around, I'll cut off a toe and you can stay.
All right.